Good afternoon, everybody. As you've heard, my name is Will Groover. I'm a first-year master's student at Auburn University. I just finished up my first semester under the direction of Dr. Kathy Lawrence. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about my thesis and some aspects of it today. And it's entitled, A Diagnostic Identification of Melodigyne Species in Row Crops. So a little introduction on what I'm working with. It's specifically the root knot nematode, and that's in the genus of Melodigyne, and it's found pretty much all over the world. It really likes tropical, subtropical areas, and typically the type of soil you'll see in is very sandy soil. So for our research in the state of Alabama, we'll typically see that in the south part of the state. We have a lot sandier soil base there, so a lot of the research that I'm doing is in the south part of the state. And so species ID is really important because it helps you set up your crop rotations. And so in the long term, you can get some really good control if you know what species you have for your crop rotations. So a few statistics about root knot crop loss in cotton in 2014. The United States lost around 3% of the cotton crop last year, or I guess 2 years ago now, it's 2016. And that comes out to around, you know, 500,000 bales. And if you look at the math on that, price-wise, it's upwards of $150 million. So it's pretty substantial. And if you look locally for us and our research, the state of Alabama, it's a little less, but these numbers fluctuate year to year. And in 2014, is around 1%, which is still, you know, a little over $2 million. So it's a really significant parasite for the state and cotton. So species ID. There are several very common root knot species that we'll see in the state of Alabama and most of our row crops and cotton. These are the southern root knot, the peanut root knot, and soybean root knot. And respectively, these species are Melodigyne incognita, Melodigyne arenaria, and Melodigyne javanica. And unfortunately, just because of their name, they're not crop specific. So just because you may have soybean root knot does not necessarily mean it's always going to be in soybean. So knowing what species you have in your crop is important. So as I was looking at how we're going to be able to identify species for our state, there's multiple very common ways to do this. And four of the most common ones I found when I was reading papers was morphological features, which is simply looking at the physical characteristics of the nematode to determine species. There's a host differential test, which is what we currently use at Auburn University, and that's having your population of unknown species and inoculating it over several different common crops, and based on what shows galling of the roots from the root knot, you know what species you have. And then the last two are isozyme analysis and molecular identification. So I was trying to create an expedited method for species ID. These are the two that I decided to look at. And after reading papers, and I decided to create an assay with molecular tools, because my background is in polymerase chain reaction, gel electrophoresis, some molecular type stuff with DNA. So that's where we decided to go with our species ID, and that's what I'm really going to emphasize throughout this talk. So here's an example of a host differential test, and that's what we currently do at Auburn. So you can see we've got my laser is here. We've got six different crops on the top, and then we have, I guess this is four species and several races of two of them. We have Incognita, Arenaria, Javanica, and Haplia. And these are relatively common species you'll see throughout the United States. And the plus and minuses will show simply the plus means that there's galling on the roots from it. The minus means that there's no galling. So it's not going to bother the host plant. So whenever you run this, you can then figure out, you know, by process of elimination, what species you have on your test. So here are two host differentials that I currently have in the greenhouse. I have one from our greenhouse population here, and then one from the Prattville Research Station in Alabama. So the greenhouse, our lab does a lot of root knot nematode research, so I just took a population of stuff that we use and just inoculated across the test to see what we have in the greenhouse. And then as well as I'm running one from a Prattville station, which is kind of central Alabama, where I know that we have root knot pressure. So I'm using this as a standard, and so once I finish this test, I think it actually comes out next week, So once I can figure out what that is, I'll use that as my standard to compare to the molecular assay that I'm developing currently. So going forward, we're looking for a more efficient way than the host differential for species ID. Oh, and I forgot to mention, more efficient because it takes, 45 to 60 days to be able to ID your species. So we want something that's a little quicker than that. So what I've decided, as I mentioned earlier, is we're going to start looking at some molecular techniques to kind of increase that from 45 to 60 to as quick as 3 to 5 days or as much as a week. So for this project, there's two primary objectives for what I'm going to be doing. The first objective is I'm developing and implementing a molecular diagnostic tool. And then the second one is simply going to be going out in the state to areas with known pressure and seeing what species we have of Molluridogyne in the state. So we kind of want to get a map of what species we have, and maybe they're centralized to various locations, and we really don't know what we'll find. So we just want to find as many species as we can. So for objective one, I'm going to kind of walk through how we extract nematodes from the roots and soil, and as well as the just run molecular work on it. So first off, you can see here I am diligently working in the lab, of course. So we first will get the sample, the roots or soil we work with, we extract from both, and you'll run it through a bleach solution and scrub the roots, and then run it through a gravity sieve to where you can collect the nematodes. And then from there, we'll run it through a sucrose centrifuge system so that we can really clean up the sample a little bit and get as much dirt out as we can. So then once I have that, I'll run this kind of a modified Bierman's funnel that I've set up. It's for hatching eggs. So whenever I do the DNA amplification, it's easier to work with the juveniles than it is the eggs. So I'll hatch out any eggs I have. If I already have juveniles in the sample I collect, I can skip this step. So once I do that, I'll then go under a microscope and individually pick out a juvenile from it and place it in 20 microliters of water. And so this 20 microliters of water with one juvenile, I'll then roll a pipette tip over it and bust it. And that'll be my DNA template for whenever I amplify the DNA. So then, of course, I'll run it through a PCR and amplify specific regions, and then run it on a auger-rich gel to see what size fragment I get from the PCR. So when I first started this, I guess around August, I went up to the University of Nebraska and visited Dr. Tom Powers, who's a molecular nematologist there. And after talking with him, we decided the first set that I would use to try, or the first primer set that I would try and use to ID species would be the C2F3-1108 set. And this is a set he developed, I guess it's been a little over 20 years now, so it's been around for a bit. And for those of you unfamiliar, a primer set is just a small DNA sequence built that you know will bind to the template DNA, and then it'll amplify a certain region. And then based on what size that region is, you can tell what species or whatever you're looking at that region will amplify. So this is a really good set because it's one of the few that can actually differentiate species. So you can run this one set and you'll be able to, as you can see the list here, that's all the species it'll differentiate. However, as science goes, I guess, we couldn't get it to work. I was there for a week, we couldn't get it to work there, and I went back to Auburn and tried for another month or two, and we still couldn't get it to work. And you can see I have an example gel. Don't know where this laser is half the time. But you can see that there's one lane here that worked, and that's the only successful amplification I've ever gotten from the set. So eventually we just kind of said, okay, well, we kind of need to move on and try to look at other options. So we moved on to species-specific sets. So sets that have been developed in the past that are specific to Incognita, Arenaria, Javanica, or what have you, etc. So this was the second screen, as I kind of mentioned. After being unable to get this first set to really work, kind of took a step back and said, all right, well, let's look at a really basic set that seems to have a pretty high success rate, but won't. It'll just amplify the same size fragment for all of them, for all species, just to make sure that our system works. So to do that, I found a set from a paper called the JB3-JB5. And I got this one to work really well. It always produces right around a 400 base pair fragment, which unfortunately, if they're all 400, I can't tell you what species it is, but it was a start. So it was the first time we had a really successful run with our molecular work. So from there, we started looking at some species-specific sets to try and really figure out what species we actually have. So you can see here I've got an example of two gels that I've run. The one on the left is a JB3, JB5. If you look up top, right around here is a 500 base pair of the ladder, which is just kind of your marker to see what size your fragment is. And so all these bands going along it are all right around 400 base pairs. So this gel worked great. So this is the JB3, JB5 set, and it worked wonderfully. And then, of course, these last two, These last two, I had a water temp with my negative control, so that's what we expected to see. Unfortunately, where we currently are, we're running, this is a incognita-specific primer, which is really what we expect to find with the majority of the samples. You can see we have about a 50% success rate. It makes about a 900 base pair fragment, and this is 1 kV. So about half of them have worked, and that's about the best success I've gotten so far. So going forward, I need to kind of tweak our system a little bit to where we can get a higher percentage, because 50 is not really good enough for what we're wanting for the universe. So here's a quick table of all the sets I've been screening to see what works and what doesn't work. So objective two is just the collection part. Haven't really done a lot with this yet, but what we want to do is kind of go out in the state and just start collecting. And so you can see here, all these numbers are Auburn research stations, and the ones I have an arrow next to, we know have some kind of either Mordegon research going on, or they just have root knot pressure. So I want to hit these stations and sample and see what, so that'll be where I start when I venture into the state and start sampling. So in summary, currently I'm still screening primers, trying to get a better success rate than 50%. We want to get that as high as possible. And really, another takeaway from this is that so far I've only ID'd incognita, but that's the most prevalent, so that's what we expect to see right out the gate. And going forward, we just want to keep building on our map and really get an idea of what we have in Alabama. And I also am going to look at the isozyme analysis. I haven't done any work with that yet, as I mentioned earlier. And I want to really see how that works in comparison to the molecular ID. Because it's possible that we can get a better success with that than we can the molecular. So what we really want to get out of this is, theoretically, we can have a grower in the state of Alabama that knows they have root knot pressure and can go out and sample and send it in. And within, 3 to 5 days, we can then turn around and tell them what species it is, so that going forward they know how to really benefit from a crop rotation going forward. And then I kind of ballpark, this is a bit of a stretch here, this $1.50. Well, that's around what I'm spending right now when I run a sample. And that'll obviously change as we kind of get it going and are doing more and more in bulk going forward. But it's financially feasible, so it's really a service that Auburn could potentially offer. And then here's my references. And thanks for letting me talk today. I really appreciate it. And if you have any questions, I'd love to take them at this time.
We've got time for a couple of questions.
What is your Mordegon population in Alabama compared to the
Well, in the past, it has been higher. We've seen more root knot, but recently Reniform has been a growing. We've seen it more and more. I don't know what the ratios are, but I would say, and this is just me kind of spitballing, but I would think that we have more root knot pressure, but Reniform is definitely on the rise.
Have you found the Mordegon interlobi in Alabama yet?
We have not. I do have a set of primers that are specific for that, and I've been screening them, but we haven't found it yet. With this, I haven't seen it, but we haven't seen it in Alabama yet. But I suspect it might be there. You would think, right?
How are you going to deal with mixed species within the same field?
It's a good question. That's something that we're going to look at going forward, because we would assume that every field is not going to have one species in it. I know that we're going to find some with more. And, so that's something I'm going to have to look into. I don't honestly have a good answer for it, but one thing that I've thought about looking at too is seeing how these species interact over running microplot trials and seeing if we infect a field with two species, how do they interact based on various crops that we have. So to be honest, I really haven't gotten there yet. So.
Is it necessary to validate your PTR results?
I think so. I think validating everything is important in science.
How hard do you do that?
Well, what I'm doing now is running a host differential test. So.
Although you might short circuit that, just if it goes hot, it's probably either, unless you happen to be in Malawi or somewhere, it's probably either in the hot or
right. Right. Thank you. Thanks.